Well, believe it or not, even though there's a lot of football going on right now and top stories with Baker Mayfield out, rivalry week for us with Jackson Hoover Friday night, and, of course, the McKinley-Maslin game on Saturday, the NBA tipped off its season last night. The Cavaliers will tip off their season tonight on the road. And to preview that game and this season, let's go to the Wake 'Em Way hotline, bring in the outstanding Cavaliers beat reporter at Cleveland.com, the Plain Dealer, and a good friend for many, many years. You can follow him on Twitter at Chris Fedor. He is Chris Fedor. How are you, C-Fed?
Kenny, man, I'm doing great. How are you, bud?
I'm good. Thanks for making time for JT and I today to talk some Cavs basketball, Chris. And I want to get your thoughts on what you saw in the preseason with this team, the lineups that they went with. Are we going to see the same lineup tonight, starting lineup, that they went with in the preseason, which was a bunch of the Utes, from our good buddy, my cousin Vinny?
So J.V. Bickerstaff is very, very guarded when it comes to his lineup stuff. We ask him at practice, and he doesn't tell us. We ask him at shoot around and he doesn't tell us. I'm sure we're going to ask him before the game when he meets with reporters. And again, he's not going to tell us. But all of the indications that I've gotten from talking to as many people around the organization as possible is that they're going to go with Lauri Markkanen at small forward tonight in the starting lineup. The other four spots are going to be Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen. Again, this isn't confirmed by JB. He hasn't said it. But you have to read the tea leaves this time of year. And I think right. It's going to be Markkanen at the three.
Is that because of what he offers from beyond the arc and the fact that they were the worst three-point shooting team last year in the entire league?
So I think there's a big domino effect that comes into play that's really, really important when it comes to Markkanen at the three. And I think it starts here. They still believe in number five pick last year, Isaac Okoro. And they're trying to find ways, guys, to get him more comfortable on the offensive end. They know what he can do defensively. They're excited about that potential defensively. But they recognize that his ceiling is going to be attached to his offense. So a big part of this is finding a way to make Isaac Okoro more comfortable. This is a guy who grew up with the ball in his hands. This is somebody who is more comfortable clearly when the ball is in his hands. He can be a playmaker. His best individual games last year came with one of Darius or Colin missing. And okay. I don't think that was a coincidence. And if you saw it throughout the preseason, Isaac just had no place in a starting lineup next to two ball-dominant guards, Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. Taking him out of that starting lineup will give him more freedom on the offensive end to expand that part of his game. The other part of it is exactly what you said, Kenny. If they're committed, and they are, to Allen and Mobley in the front court, that is not a lot of spacing. Last year, by any metric, they were one of the most congested offenses in the entire NBA. Darius didn't have a lot of room. Colin Sexton didn't have a lot of room. Well, Mobley's not Kevin Love, right? He doesn't have that same kind of skill set where he can stretch it out to the three-point line. So if they're committed to shooting more threes, and giving more space to Allen, Mobley, Garland, Sexton, Isaac doesn't bring that. He does not bring that. Markkanen does. He shoots it well. He can space the floor. And he's an offensive threat that is going to take pressure off of everybody else around him. There's one more domino effect here. Kevin Love showed up to training camp in the preseason healthy, motivated, and engaged. I'm not saying it's going to last. I have no idea if it's going to last. But for now, that is the Kevin Love that showed up. And he showed himself to be one of the top players on this roster still. They're going with a 9 or maybe 10-man rotation. And Kevin is one of the 8 most important. I don't think I would have said that 4 weeks ago. But I have to go by what I've been told and what I've been able to see. And if you're going to give Kevin 20 minutes a night right around there, the only way to do that is to steal minutes with Markkanen at the three.
Hey, that's fine by me. You know, if the guy comes in healthy and he can give you what he thinks he can, there was a reason they wanted him on that Olympic team, or maybe didn't, but the fact remains they chose him to be on that team. And if he can give you what you're paying him for, and obviously nobody else wants him, I'm fine with that. But if we go through another season where he only gives you maybe double-digit games like 10 to 13 or whatever it was, then it's a problem. Chris, I want to ask you about J.B. Bickerstaff. What did he learn from last season? What do you expect from him moving forward?
I think the main thing that he learned, guys, is it was time to modernize this offense. And everything that he's been preaching for, the last 3 months or so is fast, free, and fun. That's the kind of style that they want. Now, yeah, they're going to play an unconventional lineup. They're going to play big ball. But it's size and skill, right? It's not just lumbering bigs out there on the court. So I think the skill factor of Evan Mobley, even Jared Allen to a lesser extent, and then Markkanen for sure, is going to allow them to play, one, a bunch of different lineup combinations, but I think it's going to allow them to play the kind of style that JB wants to have. They can't be near the bottom of the NBA in three-point attempts. Forget the makes. Forget the percentage. Can't be that low in terms of attempts. You have to be willing to put those up in today's era. So that's a big key. And they also recognize that, you know, in the half court, this is the kind of team that often got bogged down, right? You know, Colin can go out and he can create on his own, and Darius can go out and create on his own, but they don't have a lot of guys that can just go out and get you a bucket, right? So they don't want to get bogged down in the half court. One way to do that is to try and get out in transition, score before the defense gets set, or even just get into their sets quicker so that the shot clock isn't winding down and somebody just has to create something out of nothing.
Chris Fedor, our guest, outstanding Cavaliers beat reporter at theplaindealercleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter at Chris Fedor, breaking down the Cavs as they get ready to open their season tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies on the road in Memphis. Chris, let's talk about the backcourt. Defensively, they're a nightmare, right? Teams exploit them. But now with the bigs, and they're going to start 3 7-footers, it sounds like, that should help the backcourt there defensively. But what about offensively? What do you expect from these two this year? Are we looking at 220-point scorers this year? Is that the expectation out of that backcourt for this team offensively?
So I wrote this morning for Cleveland.com, guys. In the days leading up to the opener, there were internal conversations about who should start next to Darius Garland in the backcourt. It was between Colin Sexton or Isaac Okoro. Now, that was tied to fit. That was tied to trying to find the best combination. I think it's going to be Sexton still. I think it's really, really difficult to pull one of your most productive players, no matter all the questions about Colin, out of the starting lineup. At this point, for Isaac, who is an offensive liability and really hasn't earned that spot the way that Colin has. So I think it's going to be Sexton and Garland, but there was a debate about it. Wow. Because of what you said, Kenny, the defensive limitations that those guys have, and I think sometimes the offensive conflicts that can come with them playing together. Right. In saying that, Sexton and Garland together in April and May last year were very, very good. Their numbers were good. The Cavs weren't winning games for a variety of reasons, but their numbers were good together, and I thought that was a promising sign. I think you're going to see this year a shift away from Colin and towards Darius.
Wow.
The way that it's been phrased to me is that this is Darius's team. This is Darius's offense.
Good.
He's going to have to lead us. And I think that's a good shift for the Cavs because stylistically, Darius is a lot easier to play with.
Yeah, and you know what, Chris? All you have to do is go back and look, you know, when they picked a player from the Cavs to practice against the USA team. They didn't pick Colin. They picked Darius. I think he's more respected throughout the league, even though he averages less points a game than Colin Sexton. Am I off on that or no?
Well, I was told that the reason why they did that, if we're being honest about it, the size of Colin is problematic for the position that he plays. And okay. Team USA has always built a team around switchy, athletic players that can at least guard their own position. So having a 6'1 guard probably wasn't ideal for Team USA, but I understand what you're saying. If you read anything in terms of off-season previews, like people are predicting Darius to have a breakout season inside and outside the organization. And I just think it's easier to see a path for Darius becoming that all-star caliber player more so than it is for Colin, because the things that Darius brings to the table offensively, they're not the same level as the top point guards in the NBA, but he can do those things that the top point guards in the NBA do.
Chris, you know, you talk about these different lineups, and it makes me wonder, and I go back to every time you get into the meat of the season, it's, oh, the Cavaliers have started 35 different lineups so far this season. But it's usually because of injury. So I guess the real question here is, can it be successful with a rotating lineup?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think it remains to be seen. I think one of the problems, Kenny and JT, is that Darius has dealt with injuries throughout his career, even going back to college. Colin Sexton right now is dealing with a sore shoulder already. He missed some games last year for the first time in his career. Markkanen has not been the picture of health or consistency. Ricky Rubio, he's dealt with injuries throughout his career. Kevin Love, same thing. So, like, with the exception of, I guess, Mobley, because we don't know enough about him, Allen and Okoro, like, five of the top eight players or something like that, really haven't been able to show that they can stay healthy consistently. So I do think that's going to lend itself to, you know, trying out different lineups and combinations. But I think another reason why they did what they did last year beyond the injuries, guys, is because there was a lot of experimentation going on. And I do think to some degree that's going to continue, because I think there are still answers about who plays best with who, and you need those, and the only way to find those is by continuing to tinker with different lineups.
Chris, I want to go back to Colin here for a second. They had an opportunity to extend him, as other teams did with some of their players on that first rookie contract, right? They elected not to. The deadline passed at 6 o'clock. I was not surprised by that. I think this is just me. I think they want to see what another team might offer him as a restricted free agent, and they'll have the right to match that or let him go. Give me your thoughts on why you think they did not tender him a new contract.
Guys, this to me is complicated. Isn't everything with Colin Sexton complicated?
Absolutely, yes.
He's very, very polarizing. So I think there are a lot of layers to this, but I'll start here. Like, in these kinds of rookie-scale contract extension talks, unless somebody is getting the max and he's a no-brainer max guy, it is so difficult to quantify what you're going to give somebody. Like, how do you determine if it should be 120 or 110 or 100 or 90 or 80? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if it's the max, if it's Trey, if it's Luka, everybody knows what the max is. The only debate then is, like, okay, player option, trade kicker, incentives, all those kinds of things. But when it's not the max, it's like, okay, we see you one way, we put this value on you, and then the camp says, no, we put this value. And there just, like, isn't a great starting point, and it's really, really difficult to come up with what you feel like is a fair valuation for both sides. That's part of it. The other part of it is, yes, I do think there is some idea that because Colin is so difficult to put an actual value on, like, I don't know what his valuation is. I don't think the Cavs know. And if you allow the market to dictate that, that gives you a lot.
Man, doesn't that sound like Baker Mayfield? Honestly, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, I get it, but. Go ahead, Chris.
It takes the decision out of your hand, and it forces somebody else to make a valuation. And if they're going to give that kind of offer, then it's the Cavs' decision then to just match that. And I think the Cavs recognize that next season, in the offseason, there are only going to be four teams with projected cap space. Detroit, San Antonio, Orlando, and Oklahoma City. And these teams with projected cap space, only four, like, roll off the Cavs' tongue quickly. Like, they're very well aware of the kinds of teams that could potentially take Colin from them, give him a bigger offer sheet. But, like, who's lining up at this point to give Colin Sexton $20 to $25 million or $18 to $22 million. If you're a team with cap space, like, he's probably not going to be your top target, because for all the good things about him, there are legitimate questions that make him really, really polarizing. So I think the Cavs recognize that restricted free agency is their ally, and it gives them more leverage.
Amen to that. And that's why I don't normally agree with Kobe Altman, not a huge fan, but I agreed with him on that one. Chris, we could talk for another 15 or 20 minutes, but we know you're busy. We're up against it. Thanks for making time for us on opening night. Let's do this again after they come back from that West Coast trip with zero wins, all right?
Stop it.
Sounds great. They might be the considered underdog in the first 12 games of the season, so that should be interesting.
Wow, there you go. Chris, thanks so much. Give my best to Holly. Keep keep the faith going there. Did we get a reveal? Is it a boy or a girl? We did get a reveal, right?
We did. It's a boy. We're really excited.
There you go. There we go. Good for you, my friend. Give her my best.
Another me.
There you go. I know. Scary thought. Thanks, C-Fed. See you, buddy.
You got it, guys. Anytime.